Ah. I guess this will be the song we open up to. We'll listen to it a little bit. Recognize where that's from?
No.
You hear the voices in the background?
Yes.
What do they sound like?
Chipmunks.
It's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
There, now a nice fade out. So we were going to, I was going to start with something else, but I'm technically retarded tonight. I can't get anything to work. So I guess actually that's the way it works every night with the Wait What If podcast. So nothing new there. Welcome to the Wait What If podcast. Tonight we have a cross-generational guest. Tonight we have Papa Frank. He goes by Papa, he goes by Frank, he even goes by Grandpa from his friends and grandchildren, I guess. How was it? So as we grow up, right, as we go through life, we kind of, you know, I think the first big thing is you turn 18 and you gotta, you know, register for the draft. And then you turn 21 and you can buy alcohol. These are all like, 16 and you can drive. And then, you know, sometime usually for most people in the 20s, you get married. These are like, what do you call them? Milestones that you go. Yeah. And then, of course, there's turning 30. Oh, my gosh, I'm 30. And then turning 40. Then becoming dad. Then becoming... how was it becoming grandpa? I guess my question is, were you like, man, I'm already a grandpa? Or was it something that you just... like a badge of honor?
That was kind of natural. Just sort of natural. I didn't really think about it much.
Really?
When I thought about it, I realized I was getting older.
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it's neat.
Yeah.
It's neat. It's different from being a father.
Sure. Oh, I can imagine, because you don't, you have a lot of the fun and really don't have to deal with much of the discipline.
Yeah. That's a lot smaller aspect, I think, than people realize. Huh?
Yeah. I was, you know, I guess when I was younger, I always was kind of, I guess, afraid of those milestones, because, I mean, the idea is you want to spend as much time on this earth as possible. And as things go by, I mean, what it really comes down to is you feel like the clock is ticking away. And then, of course, you mourn the person that you used to be. Let me just write something down here real quick so I remember what I was going to say. And then, of course, you end up loving the new situation that you're in, and then you get into another situation, and you mourn the person you used to be. And I guess that's one way of living. I don't think that's a healthy way of living. I think it's more important to enjoy where you were, take from it what you did, and then really, really enjoy the moment that you're in. Try to make the moment that you're in the best part of your life, because if you don't, it's going to be depressing.
You know what I mean? Good way to describe it. Yeah.
If you're always looking back on things, saying, "Oh, you know, I wish I did this, or I wish I did that," or that's, you're not living in the present. Before you know it, time's up.
No, but one thing I noticed getting older is that as you get older, you reach a point where you realize that there's a lot more behind you than there probably is ahead of you. Time-wise.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And that's kind of an odd realization.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it has to affect your life, but
sure,
it's just reality.
How far, so you know, you ever heard the term the years fly, but the days go by slow?
I've heard that, yeah.
How does it feel like, so when I think about, I guess, high school, for me, it was 25 years ago. It feels like it was a long time ago. It feels like you know, a long time ago. But then when I think about from there to here, I'm 40 years old, married with two kids. It seems like that, you know, cause you think back on it, you're like, okay, that was a long time ago, but now I'm here. So, that those 25 years, I guess did swing by or fly by pretty quick. Being your age, you're 70, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Looking back to your high school days, does it seem like a long time ago? Does it feel like it's 50 years ago?
In some ways, yeah. And in some ways, no. You look at the time, the actual time. Yeah, it was 1964. I graduated from high school. 64 was 52 years ago. 50 years is a long time.
Yeah.
No matter how you cut it.
Half a century.
Half a century. I remember when I turned 50, I thought, my God, I'm half a century old. that really bothered me.
Oh, really?
Really bothered. That's the only one that's actually really bothered me. Huh. For about 2 days, I was bothered. I was too busy to think about it.
I was regretting I didn't want to turn 40, and then when I did, I kind of felt like it was almost like I earned a badge or something. You know, I remember back when I was in Navigator school, we were working so hard and looking forward to get our wings, and when you got your wings, it was like becoming a made man. Or when you were when I was in my fraternity, we were pledging the fraternity, and when I got my whatever we got then, I don't even remember, pins with our letters on it or something. We got our letters. I felt like, yeah, I'm a made man now. And I kind of had the same feeling when I turned 40. I was anticipating it with a little bit of, what's that word I'm looking for? Whatever. I was a little nervous about it. But once I turned 40, I kind of felt like, I guess if we took our culture, right, and we boiled it down to the way we were 5,000 years ago, I feel like I finally moved from either the warrior or the farmer, and now they gave me the old stick, and now I'd probably be getting the crown, right? I'd be in charge of the unit at that point. I got my battle scars, and now it's time for me to let the younger guys do the the hard work and let me start to, I don't know, use my knowledge that I've gained. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, sure.
So you'd be like the medicine man. They would roll you in. Yeah. And if you were in the tribe, you would have like the long hair and a bunch of plates in your lips and stuff and chicken bones.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, the it was kind of a relief, you know. I mean, turning 50, one of the things I thought about was, my God, it's a relief to turn 50. It's almost like when you're in college or your high school, even when summer was over, you went back to school.
Yeah.
And it was a relief to, summer's great, but it was a relief to have summer over because you got through it without too much difficulty. You didn't get thrown in jail, didn't get in too much trouble.
Uh-huh. I never actually had that feeling. I was always regretting school starting.
Yeah, I never regretted school starting. I always looked forward to it. So it was kind of a relief to get to hit 50.
Yeah.
Because I arrived there, got to be that old.
Yeah, some people don't get to be that old.
And I turned 70, and I didn't feel that way at all. It wasn't a relief to turn 70.
Oh, really?
But it just doesn't make any sense anymore. It doesn't add up.
What doesn't? Like the fact that you're 70, you just don't feel like it?
Like the numbers don't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's a strange feeling.
Do you agree with, you know when you were a kid and summers lasted forever? Gosh, I remember summer vacation would come in, I was like, man, I have the whole summer to do whatever I want. And we would, you know, spend the days doing this or that. Maybe we'd go on vacation. It just lasted forever. And then, September came around and we'd start school again. And now, so it was what, maybe 10 weeks summer break?
Yeah, it's not very long.
Right? No. Now 10 weeks is like, it goes by so quick. I don't even look, I mean, so what's 10 weeks from now? We're just starting March, April, May, so...
middle of May.
Yeah. So what? No, actually, it would be middle of May, June. It would be the middle of June, right? Because
10 weeks.
Yeah. So we got 4 weeks in March, yeah. 4 weeks in April. Oh, huh. Yeah. Sorry. It's the dyslexia. I'm telling you, I can't visualize things like that.
That's all right.
But yeah, and the reason why when we were young and time, at least this is what people say, the reason why we were young and time went by so slowly is because like for Matt, he's 4 years old. So he just spent, you know, the last 2 years, how quickly they went by. I mean, 2017, 2015, it doesn't seem that long ago for us, but to him, that was half his life.
Half his lifetime, yeah. Yeah, I think that's why it goes by quicker when you get older.
Because it just becomes a smaller and smaller...
Smaller part of your life as you've led it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Were you expecting between... What year were you born? 1946. Okay. Were you expecting between 1946 and today to see the amount of things that have changed... over the last 70 years? And I guess for you, it would really be over the last 55 years, you know, right when you really could understand what was around the world, meaning technologically, like...
No, technology, no. No, I wasn't a good predictor of developments
technologically. What was technology for you guys back then? Like, I guess it wasn't even on your radar, right? You weren't technology. Looking forward to new gadgets because there were no gadgets.
Well, I'm not that old.
Well, I mean, there were no gadgets. Would they have a calculator?
No, we didn't have calculators.
Right.
First calculator I saw was in 1972. And I was teaching and I had an adding machine to do grades. I had a handle. You pulled the handle. You'd press the buttons and pull the handle, and it would calculate. It would add things.
Okay.
It added. I mean, that's all. That was it. One of the other teachers came in with a calculator. It was electronic, and it cost him $250 in 1972. He said, "I just got this. It's amazing. It adds, subtracts, multiplies, and divides."
And it was big, right?
And it was big and clunky.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, my God, that's a lot of money for that little thing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever was aware of real technology.
And now for that same price and something a lot smaller than that, you can, like this always blows my mind. I can take that, you know, you've seen, obviously, you know what a cell phone is. You can take a cell phone, press a button, and you're broadcasting to the world, you know?
It's amazing, yeah.
Like someone in Sri Lanka with a Wi-Fi, or not even with internet, can look and I'll talk to them live broadcast.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, I remember when the second Iraq war started, it was amazing to see live feeds. They had there was like an embedded journalist with a group of Marines and they were engaging, I don't know, a building. And the journalist was hunkered down behind a like a berm, and there was a cameraman there, and I don't know what else. And I was like, "Holy mackerel, we're seeing this live!" And it I couldn't fathom. And this is only what 15 years ago, less than that, 13 years ago. I couldn't fathom how that technology worked. Like, where was that signal? How was it going into outer space, and then to us live? You know, I understand that like you can do live broadcasts from like a studio. That makes sense because, you know, you got the satellite dishes and all that, but to be out in the middle of the desert and be able to see that happening live, blew my mind.
Yeah, it's amazing. The, contrast that with, when I was in Germany, the service, 1966, 67, I wanted to call home one day and I had to go down to the train station and had to use the telephones, and it was $10 per minute.
Whoa!
If I called home, you could call back to the States, $10. 1967.
That's a lot of money.
It was a chunk of money.
It's a lot. Like, I mean, make a phone call today, it's a lot of money.
Maybe $80, $90, and I couldn't figure out how to do it, so I didn't even do it.
Yeah.
So gosh, I didn't know how to use the phone in Germany.
Why was it so expensive? Oh, it was just harder to do, right? I guess it, I don't know.
I have no idea. But that was a, now today, and if you have a cell phone, apparently you just dial in just like you're here.
Yeah, just put any number in. And you don't even have to do that. You do what they call voice over internet, VOIP. And that's, I would use that anytime I'm calling overseas. I mean, I do interviews on the show with people from, let's see, the furthest was Japan. And it was, you know, I brought them up on Skype and it was just like we were chatting in this room, you know, yeah, looking at each other face to face.
That's amazing.
I mean, just the video phones alone, 5 years ago, you know, you might have had kind of a grainy, you know, maybe on your iPhone. I forget what that, oh, FaceTime. I don't use FaceTime that much. But, and now, oh, and you had to be, you know, on Wi-Fi. Now you can go anywhere. You can go, I mean, as long as you have a signal, you can go to a mountain and talk with people face to face.
Yeah, that's amazing. But in 1966, I never thought about what I had to do to call home from Germany.
Yeah.
And never thought about, gee, maybe in 20 or 30 years, you'd be able to do this a lot more easily. Never crossed my mind.
Yeah. From a,
I wasn't looking ahead.
From a computer in your tent, you can do it now if you're overseas.
Yeah. We didn't have computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the first time I saw a computer was probably in 1976. I was working for a chemical company.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the home office and they showed me the computer room. And it was probably 20 by 15. Mm-hmm. And there was this gigantic computer in there.
Wow.
And it used punch cards, the old IBM punch cards.
Yeah, that blows my mind. I can't even figure out how that works.
It took up about half the room. And they were so proud of it because they had recently purchased that. I forget how many thousands of dollars it was. It was a lot of money. But they could do inventory across the whole company. They could keep track of inventory and do payroll. And this was an amazing thing. Now, apparently, you know, you could do the same thing with a laptop.
You could do it with an iPhone, with a phone in your pocket.
Yeah. And I had no idea. Computers were for me was like way over my head and had no thought about what kind of value they were. I knew then at that point working for the company, I knew that was a good machine because I understood about inventory and payroll, things like that. I knew that was better than doing it by hand.
Yeah.
But I didn't really look ahead. I mean, some people, I guess, could. I couldn't foresee small computers. It never occurred to me that
they would even need one.
20 years ago, these would be a lot smaller.
It makes you think what we're not even considering now. So I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they try to predict the future is to compare it to their past and see it as a linear progression. But, I mean, you can see even in your lifetime or even in your parents' lifetime that doesn't work, because take the advent of the car, right? So 1903, there were still a lot of places around the United States that didn't have phone lines. A lot, probably half the country weren't using phones. Maybe more in 1903. I don't know why I'm using 1903, but let's just say the 1900s. So this is your parents' lifetime. So not everyone had a phone line. There was a lot of places without electricity still. I mean, it had only been 25 years earlier that they were starting to, you know, wire major cities and stuff. So, and then again, if cars are just becoming, they were the new technology, that means most people were going on horseback or carriage or train or something like that. And then, and what's amazing about that too, is someone was flying at that time, you know, someone actually within that time, flew an airplane. So you take someone from 1910 and then you put them in 1946, you know, you might be amazed at all the electricity, you might be amazed at, but everything would make sense. You know, if you walked into a house, you would say, okay, this house, you know, has lights everywhere. But I understand that, you know, I understand that, okay, that makes sense that would happen. But you take that same person and you put them in a time machine and bring them today, they would see the lights and they would say, okay, I get that. But the cars that are driving by, would airplanes shooting through that, they would hear, and they'd look up and they'd see this thing soaring through the air. There would be no way to really conceive that. These laptops, I mean, right here in front of me, I have three electronic devices that are glowing. They wouldn't, You know, it would seem to them like they've gone to an alien world. Maybe. And that's only 100 years.
Maybe. Yeah, but, because of the difference between a 1903 Oldsmobile and well, they don't even make Oldsmobiles anymore, but a 2016, 17 Ford.
Right.
Big difference in those cars. But if you take 1936 to 2016, they look different, but the fundamental things weren't that much different.
But you put someone in, they might not even be able to start it.
Probably.
Put them into my truck and there's a big computer screen that pops up and things are talking to you. My phone talks to my truck. It tells me which way to turn. And then what's amazing, I don't know if you ever use Audible or... so I listen to audiobooks, but I can read them on my phone. So I'll pick up Kindle and flip through a few pages, put it down, get in my car, and it'll pick up where I left off, which page I left off without doing anything. It just knows, it picks up on that. So what I was getting at with that, with the comparison, I guess now take someone from 1900, or no, I'm sorry, take someone from 1800 and bring him 1900. He might be blown away a little bit, you know? If he sees some lights and stuff, it's still... And then before that, I mean, it doesn't matter. 1800 to 1500, there's really no difference. I mean, people dressed a little different, some technological changes, but not much. Cannons might freak someone out from... No, they had them in 1500, didn't they?
Sure.
Yeah. So you know, now there's 500 years, not much has changed. And then take someone from 1500 and go back to 2000 or the birth of Christ. Again, not much changed during that amount of time. But now... Someone who's born in 1946 and today, 2017, there's vast differences. Heck, from when I was born to now, 1976 to 2017, there's vast differences. So as you can see, the technology begets technology, so it starts to curve up faster and faster and faster. And I think you're already seeing it with just over the last, like just take 2015 as a benchmark, okay? Look at the technology we had then and look at how much it has advanced just in 3 years. You know, there's things coming online now that actually we're kind of expecting. At least people that are into technology, rather than, you know, the technology we had in 2015 isn't going to stay the same at the same rate of advancement as 2000 to 2015. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like by 2020... They're saying that that there's a goal to have self-driving cars on a lot of these roads. So with the exponential growth of technology puts us in this just difficult way to predict what the future holds. And the changes over the next 50 years are going to be like the changes of the first 2,000 years of mankind.
Maybe. The fundamentals haven't changed, though.
I mean, quantum computing.
Yeah, but you mentioned something there, the Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, when I was a kid, we didn't have Kindles. Nobody even thought about Kindles. I mean, who even predicted that could happen?
Right.
But at the same time, we're using electricity. It's powered by electricity.
Right.
By
batteries. Understand that.
Different kind of battery, but it's not a D cell anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still a battery. We're still reading.
Right.
I mean, you're still reading
the word.
People are still writing books. It goes on the Kindle or it can be printed. So anybody who reads 100 years ago wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, they'd be surprised at the form of the Kindle, but the fundamental, I mean, you're still reading.
Sure.
You're still writing and reading.
Yeah, I don't think that part will change.
That doesn't change that much. Cars. You still get in the car and you go down the road, whether you're driving it or whether your computer's driving it.
Right.
It still has four wheels and an engine, seats.
Yeah.
Looking out windshields. Those things aren't changing. You know, your computer may bring you where you're going.
Right.
But it's not, the experience isn't fundamentally different from your driver bringing you to where you're going. You know, you get in, sit down in the seat, and somebody else is operating the vehicle.
I think where you see the difference is is how information. So you're right. The reading is the same, like on the Kindle, but to show someone a book, it looks like a page off a book. When you look at it, it doesn't look like a computer screen. And then, you know, to someone who was born in 1946 or someone who lived in 1946, let's just say, and someone would say, oh wow, that's okay. I get it. You're right. I see. It looks like a sheet of paper. I think they'd be amazed that it would flip pages without actually turning a page. Like the words have changed.
The technology is amazing. Yeah.
And then to be able to say, oh, have you ever read Moby Dick? No, I haven't. Well, watch this. You press a button and now Moby Dick is there, and it's, you know, weighs a couple of ounces. It's paper thin. And, or you could, you know, if you had enough memory on these, I haven't owned a Kindle in like 10 years, but if you had enough memory, you can have a library. You can have an entire library in what equates to a little notepad. I mean, that must, or, I mean, just look at this computer I have right here. The, I always forget what the heck we call this, the Surface. I mean, there's no end to the amount of information that's on here. I mean, it's attached to the internet. There's more than a library. There's the entire world. The entire catalog of the entire world is available right there. And I can walk outside, sit on the back porch, and access any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that to me, that would be mind-blowing. And that's just what we see now. You know, where is it going to go? I mean, they talk about paper. Like, so we have the Kindle, but they're talking about being able to have sheets of paper that can change the text. So you're not, you know, your newspaper would literally be just one piece of paper and you can flip through it, or if it's even that, if it'd be even anything that you have to hold on to.
It's a natural, it seems to me that it's a natural development. What I would consider a normal development. It's more sophisticated.
Right.
But it's not a fundamental change.
But it's a rapid change.
Rapid change. Yeah, no question about that. Very rapid change with computers. But you're still doing tasks. The computer lets you do things faster.
Yeah.
More efficiently. But it doesn't, it's different from when they invented writing.
Yeah.
You know, before there was writing, all there was speech, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could talk to somebody, but you couldn't record in any fashion
what pictures was said. Or, yeah. Once when did that cat, when did they come up with writing? Do you
writing,
know?
Writing, I have no idea. I mean,
does anyone know? Probably not.
Several thousand years ago. But after writing was used, you had a way to preserve what was said.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a complete change in direction. Now you've got a record of what was said,
mm-hmm.
or what was done. I mean, that's a huge change. That's a fundamental change. But from then, with writing, cuneiform and clay tablets, to today, we're still using writing. I mean, writing isn't that much different.
No, except we do it with our thumbs.
The way we do it.
Yeah.
And how fast we do it.
Yeah.
But it's still writing.
I think, I think you'll see a change in that. And this is, I mean, you could take this for what it's worth. It's just a thought. You know how people use emojis now? An emoji is like when you're writing a text and you say, hey, do you want to get coffee? And you throw a thumbs up to them, or it's almost like a modern, it's like you're going back to
a shortcut or
hieroglyphics. Yeah, it's like you're going back to hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
It seems to me that at some point, you know, the augmented reality is going to become a reality. So your glasses that you're wearing now will be either on contact lenses, or maybe just, you know, you want to wear your glasses, so you're wearing them now, but everything around us, it would be augmented, meaning we're sharing information and we're both looking at a computer image on the table, or it could be a 3D computer image, or we could be chatting, but we're just chatting with shortcuts, you know, little up, and we don't even have to use our voices. We can just have a conversation, never say anything, and communicate with quick little bursts of information.
Yeah, you're still using symbols to transfer
send
back and forth.
Did you know they did they mapped two people's brains, and they mapped, I think it was some sort of visual cortex. And they had a person think of, I don't know, let's say a blue box or a red ball. And they had the other guy do that in like France. So these people are like 6,000 miles apart. And they wired them up and they had one man think of the blue ball or whatever I said, the blue box. And the person in France received that just by him thinking, and it stimulated his brain to show him the image that the guy was thinking of, all by mapping where and how, when they thought of that, that their brain was illuminated. Does that make sense?
No.
So when you think of something, when you think of a four-leaf clover, when you see that in your head and you think about it, it's activating a very specific part of your brain.
Okay.
And that's your, if you can map that area and how your brain reacts to thinking about a four-leaf clover, and then you map mine, then when I think of one and it stimulates that part of your brain, you will see that. They're already doing it with like...
What stimulates the brain, though? What stimulates
electricity, I guess.
Are they doing it artificially?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So they're communicating with just thought.
Producing the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
The image.
And I read this years ago, but I don't remember the exact things of it. But you can look it up. You can look up like people communicate or experiment communicating with basically thought. They even had a Joe Rogan did this on one of his TV shows. They took a drone and they hooked up the remote control. They had Joe Rogan think in his head about, all right, when I want to turn left, I'm going to think about an apple. When I want to turn right, or maybe he thought about of a left, a green arrow, and right, a green arrow, you know, just turning different directions. And then they mapped again his brain where this was going on, and they put the thing on his head, and he was able to think, and the thing would start to, it would turn on, and it would start to fly. And he could look left and look right just by activating those portions of his brain, and that would send the message to the remote control.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read about that.
It's amazing.
That is amazing. That's a fundamental change.
Yeah. And it makes sense. It makes sense when you're just activating and causing, it makes sense when you're activating and it's causing something like that. But you can see where something in its infancy, where someone's just, you know, toying around with that idea in 100 years with the way that technology begets technology and the exponential growth. I mean, that could be something right around the corner. That I don't know what applications it could have, maybe with military, maybe with flying, with pilots, with, or maybe just two people sitting on a couch 1,000 miles apart having a conversation, just thinking about stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. But how about what's going to be other fundamental changes, though, if you're looking ahead?
I think living in the virtual world, so augmented reality. I mean, when fundamental change, do you think like television was a fundamental change?
Well, like writing and reading.
Right.
I think it's a fundamental change.
Right.
From not fire. Before fire, people had to eat everything raw.
Yeah, that would be one.
Now there suddenly it opens up a whole different experience for people.
And then I don't know whether the wheel. Yeah.
The wheel was a fundamental, I mean, a really fundamental thing. We're still using wheels.
Yeah. I don't. I've moved on to better things.
Sophisticated wheels, but yeah. Wheels nonetheless.
I've invented my own thing. It's called the Flucher. I'm not going to let you in on it yet because it's too fundamental. I'm going to work on it. And medicine. I think there's fundamental changes in medicine just for the fact that, you know, you can save lives by doing the most wild things that you could even imagine. Like we were talking about today, they're giving people measles just to have your body identify it and then attack cancer cells. I mean, gosh, that's amazing. Try to explain that to someone in like 2000 BC. You're going to be like, all right, so they're giving measles. What do you mean they? And what do you mean give? And what do you mean measles? Oh, I'm sorry. Measles is a disease that, wait, what do you mean disease? Oh, disease is a, it's a viral infection. A viral? What are you talking about? Infection? I don't understand any of this.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to have a conversation.
No.
I mean, it destroys cancer cells. Cancer? What are you talking about, Magic Man? He's a witch. Burn him.
Yeah, that's the way they handled things back then. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to move on because we started that, but I really want to find out. The honest question is, so you recently, speaking of medicine and technology, you recently had open heart surgery.
Correct.
Yeah. They changed. I mean, they basically saved your life. With relative simplicity. I mean, it's very, and I'm saying that because I'm not a cardiac surgeon, but you know, it wasn't, today, well, whatever. I'm going to let you talk about it. But my real question is, how long did the surgery last?
About 5 hours, I believe.
Okay.
So the you were surgery.
5 hours where your consciousness was ceased.
Right.
And your heart wasn't beating for a portion of it.
I think it was 2 hours they had me on the heart lung machine.
So your heart wasn't beating in your chest.
Correct.
You were a dead man for 2 hours.
Not really.
In theory. Yeah. I mean, your heart was... If you saw a body...
If you define death by the cessation of a heartbeat...
Yeah, yeah, but your brain was working, I guess. But if we brought... Let's say we brought... Hippocrates. We brought him to this... And we're like, look at this man on the table. Is he dead or alive? And we'd be like, is that his heart? Oh, that man's dead. Right? Anything profound during that time...
During that time?
Yeah. Do you remember anything? Did you have any sort of dream? No. Did you have any feeling? Did you have...
Nothing.
Wow.
No recollection of it. Yeah.
And they just shut consciousness off for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was unconscious.
Where were you? That's the question.
Where was I?
Yeah.
I was in Cleveland.
I know, but where were you? Where was the Frank... Oh, I was going to almost gave up your...
That's all right.
Your name. Yeah. Where were you during that time?
Yeah, I thought about that afterward, and I just concluded that I was unconscious. I don't remember. There seems to be a difference, too. I had the surgery. I was unconscious. Mm-hmm. I also had a pacemaker put in afterward, a couple of days afterward. There, I don't remember anything while they were working on me. Actually physically working and putting the pacemaker in.
But that one, you weren't under general, right?
No. Well, I mean, I don't remember it.
Okay, because they gave you some...
They gave me whatever it was.
It's usually...
They said that I would not be unconscious.
Yeah, it's amnesiac medicine, so...
Yeah, and I don't know if I was talking to them or, you know, listening or whatever, but I don't remember anything there either. So to me, it was all the same. Surgery... Pacemaker, who knew?
Yeah.
Didn't matter. I remember only before becoming unconscious. Mm-hmm. And then as I was waking up, I remember various things. It was foggy, but...
Yeah.
But I became conscious.
As your consciousness unthawed. That's how I see it. Like it's frozen. And
yeah.
Oof, see, that scares me. That, because I feel like your consciousness should go somewhere, you know? Like, how do they freeze it? And if that's the same scenario when you die, right? But I guess it isn't because you're not on those drugs. But if it is, that's a scary thing. I don't know if I want to face surgery just for that matter. It might be too profound of an experience for me.
It was actually pretty easy. I
mean,
I had the easy part. No, all I did was lie there on the table.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It scares the crap out of me getting surgery. Yeah. Maybe because I've assisted in surgeries and I've seen, I mean, not that they do anything wrong to you, but your body... They cracked open your chest.
Right.
Like your chest was flailed open.
Yeah.
Oof. And they could see right in there and your heart's beating.
Yeah.
your body doesn't, like, when you wake up, it's not like, oh, okay, I had a little surgery. It was a doctor that did this. No, your body is designed to say, oh, I just had a saber-toothed tiger rip my chest open, and now I got to recover from this.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, recovery wasn't much fun. The surgery was easy because I was out.
Yeah.
The recovery was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it wasn't hard. It was just uncomfortable.
Wasn't horrible?
No.
Really?
I didn't think so. And it was uncomfortable. I wouldn't want to do it again.
But yeah. But it wasn't horrible. See, getting... Yeah, that's amazing. I'm at the point, like, because... And I know eventually I'm going to need surgery. I know it's going to happen someday. Everyone eventually has to have something done. I'm at the point where I think I would panic in the operating room. And I know what the anesthesiologist is going to do. And I'm going to just pull things out of my arms and run down the hallway and butt naked. I'm going to be the guy that goes for the window and be like, you know what? I can't do this.
Probably not.
I'll tell you what I would need. I would need really, really good medicine.
They give you really good medicine.
I would want to go into that operating room and be in, like, feel like I was on a beach in Tahiti. I want all the best happy drugs you could possibly give me. If that's the case, then it'll be no problem.
That's what they give you, really.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's you're very relaxed.
So you're just like, la, la.
I mean, nobody is probably worries more than I do.
Yeah.
And the anticipation of it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I didn't worry about it all that much because I don't know why. I'm not sure why.
Because you knew you had no choice.
I knew I needed the surgery. It would have been easier to accept surgery if I had felt sick, if I had felt unwell. I never felt unwell.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt good going into it. I didn't feel like I needed surgery, but intellectually I knew I did because of the deterioration of my heart valve.
Sure.
I mean, I didn't quarrel with that. I accepted that diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, talk about technology, the day before I saw the cardiologist, and he was all excited because he had a new handheld echocardiogram machine.
That's cool.
And it was the size of a good size smartphone. And he put the little probe over my chest and said, "Oh, here it is. Look at that. Here, there's... See the valve?
That's unbelievable.
And look at right there on the left, all that white stuff, that's the calcification.
Wow.
That's what we need to remove. That's getting pretty bad. That's why we need to do it now.
See, that's sorcery.
Yeah, that was like magic. You know?
How? I mean,
that was amazing.
Think about that. Like, to develop something like that handheld device, one man couldn't do that. That is the collective work of... That's thousands and thousands and thousands of man hours by thousands of people culminating to something like that.
Over the past 150 years.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, because you're using almost like radar technology, sound technology, sonar technology.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
So
for just that one device.
And I could see it. I mean, I was sitting there, I could see it wasn't just him saying, your valve needs to be replaced. I mean, I could see that it did. And it was obvious when he explained what it was I was looking at. So that was kind of neat. But I never got sick. I never felt bad. I knew that if I didn't have the surgery, that was getting bad enough.
Yeah, eventually it would feel
bad. I would die.
Mm-hmm.
The valve would stop working, or I'd lose part of that. It would cause a stroke or something really bad. So I didn't quarrel with that. I mean, I was just happy they could fix it. I was happy that I didn't have a heart attack. I didn't have a stroke. I was not having a problem.
Sure.
So, and then physically, I'm otherwise in very good physical condition. So why not have the surgery now? I mean, I was all for it. So get rid of, get it done.
I'm hoping by the time I need my first surgery, nanotechnology is going to be at a good point. I hope they say, hey, Mr. Sullivan, we have to replace your heart valve. So I'm going to give you this shot, and okay, you're done. Come back next week. We'll see how it looks.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Could happen. Because what I went through and what people went through 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's like night and day. There's just no comparison.
Is it just from the technique?
Like because all the they're way still around,
or is it the medicine, like the pain medicine and stuff?
Yeah, the anesthesia, the pain medicine afterward. I mean, pain medicine. I didn't have any pain.
Wow.
The only time I had any pain was I was taking pain medication afterward. You wind up coughing a lot.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little pain when I coughed,
but not a terrible amount.
Wasn't terrible. I mean, wasn't anything I couldn't handle. I've had worse pain.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Hmm. It was a real pain in the neck being in the hospital. I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, hey, if this is heart surgery that's going to extend my life and correct my problem, I mean, this is great. You know, it was a great thing.
See, I don't think pain doesn't bother me. I've been in pain and it's horrible. But I mean, it doesn't bother me as much as I don't know if it's just like I think too much. It's an existential crisis to know that I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it. But the idea of lying down on the bed, having someone cease my consciousness, and during that time, I have no control over what they're doing with my body. They could drop me on the floor, or I might not wake up. You know, I don't have control over that. That's the part that freaks me out with surgery. Catheters. I've put in too many catheters to ever want to have a catheter.
I had a catheter. I didn't know when they put it in. I have no memory of that.
Yeah,
I had a breathing tube.
Yeah.
During the surgery, the doctor told me before the surgery. He said, "No, when you wake, you may wake up and realize that you have a breathing tube in.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get excited. Just relax, and we will be taking it out. But we can't. We may not be able to take it out right away until we're sure you can breathe on your own."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Fine." No memory of their taking it out. I mean, they took it out, and when I remember waking up, what I remember is I had no breathing tube in.
Okay.
I had tubes sticking in my chest.
Yeah.
Those were weird.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt, and I just couldn't move around. And the most uncomfortable thing was when they removed one of them, I had to hold my breath and kind of push.
Uh-huh.
And then the nurse pulled the tube out. That was kind of odd, but it didn't hurt at all.
Ugh, see that?
But I was on pain medication.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, because people don't realize when you open up your chest cavity, it's a sealed area. So once you do that, you have to reseal it. And if it doesn't, everything just kind of collapses. Yeah. They opened up your mediastinum, we call it. The lungs were completely, they weren't interrupted, right? The casing around the lungs?
I have no idea.
I wonder if that's the case.
Don't know. I know I had couple of drainage tubes and I had some wires in me, and I've got, you know, the long incision
down
your chest. Breastbone, and then I have four other scars where they put holes in me and put tubes in and wires.
Yeah,
that was weird, but they never hurt. I mean, it was, I don't remember any pain.
So it's not the worst thing.
I'll tell you what was the worst thing.
Yeah.
The most uncomfortable thing, the most annoying thing was after the surgery, you know, how they, you've dealt with this. I mean, to prevent bed sores.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to move around. They have to move you.
Yeah.
Well, they had these automatic beds that kept moving.
Yeah.
Independently, you know, the head, the shoulders, your thoracic area, your butt, your legs. They were all moving independently, and every 5 or 10 seconds, everything would shift. And it was almost impossible to sleep.
Yeah.
Couldn't relax because the bed was moving all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the most annoying thing about the whole the whole procedure.
Wow, if that's the most annoying thing, then I guess it really can't be that bad. Yeah.
No, as I say, it wasn't that bad.
That's amazing.
There's no fun. I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
I would do it again if I had to, of course. But it just wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And I thought it was going to be fairly bad.
How long ago was it?
October, middle of October.
And do you feel any effects now?
What kind of effects?
Like you bend over to pick something up and you're like, oh, yeah, there's...
No.
Huh.
No, I took pain medication for a couple of weeks afterward. I quit taking the pain medication. Didn't bother me. I mean, I did what they told me to mm-hmm. do or not to do. You know, I didn't lift things. I was careful. So I didn't do any damage by doing improper movements or anything. So I've reached the point now, which is kind of odd, I guess. I feel as good now as I did before the operation.
Yeah.
And for a number of weeks afterward, I didn't feel as good
mm-hmm.
because I was still recovering. But I guess a lot of people feel better at some point than they did beforehand, but I never felt bad.
Yeah.
You know, so I really can't complain.
I guess that's uncommon. It's a good thing they knew that was going on, because when you're feeling the effects, that's heart failure, and you don't really want to be walking around with heart failure.
I was fortunate because they diagnosed it early and watched it for a few years and repaired it when it needed to be repaired. And I didn't get a lot of damage by waiting too long, which is not always the case.
And what's amazing, again, we'll go back to the beginning with technology, is thinking about, I don't know, did they do this in 1946?
What? No, it was heart surgery?
Yeah, like that.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
I don't know what surgeries they had.
And I imagine they just put ether in people and breathe that a little bit, and then I don't know. I don't know the history of surgery.
I don't think they did much heart surgery in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah. And to think it's almost routine now.
Oh, they were doing this all day. I mean, this is all they did every day. I went to the Cleveland Clinic, and the people there were great. The most efficient, streamlined place I've ever seen.
You had a McHeart surgery?
Yeah, it's unbelievably efficient. You go through a lot of testing, echocardiograms, x-rays, EKGs, which is an echocardiogram, EKG, I can't remember if that's echocardiogram.
Well, yeah.
That's not.
Yeah,
not
EKG looks at your
it's
electricity.
Anyway, a lot of blood testing, everything. I never had to wait more than about 5 minutes at any one place to get a test done.
Wow.
And there were people there always waiting. And it was just so amazingly efficient. And the staff was unbelievably patient-oriented. And they did a really terrific job. And they're moving a lot of patients through there. But they have the staff, they have the doctors, they have the operating rooms. One of the reasons why I went there, I wasn't initially going to go there. I was going to go to a local hospital. Got all set to have surgery September 22nd. I got a call from the hospital saying, we have to reschedule you to October 14th because we had to deal with a couple of emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
So that night I thought, and here, I mean, it's a certain amount of anxiety that builds up when you're getting ready to go have that kind of surgery. So I told my wife, I said, look, I think I'm going to call the Cleveland Clinic tomorrow because I want to make sure that when it's scheduled, I have it.
Yeah.
I'd like to go someplace where they can handle a couple of emergencies without bumping me.
I don't know if I would
I wasn't an emergency.
Right.
So. And I understand about emergencies. I understand that, and I wouldn't have it any other way, take care of the emergency. But I want to go someplace where if they have an emergency, mm-hmm. they can still do mine without a problem. So I did, and I had same day I was scheduled at the local hospital. I wound up having the surgery at Cleveland Clinic, and it was an amazing place.
Wow. Well,
I don't mean to advertise for the
Cleveland. No, it's all right. But they did. Advertisement is not paid by.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that you didn't see any dead relatives or anything like that. But I guess that's a good thing because that meant you stayed on this side.
yeah. It wasn't a bad experience.
Hmm. All right. Well, now that I know how to do this with Skype and all that, I want to have you on again and tell some of your army stories because they're fantastic from 1960s. Oh, what I was going to go back and say right before we stopped is if you consider then, and this is the point I was making in 1946, were they doing this sort of surgery? 70 years later, they are doing this surgery. I think we can't even imagine what's going to happen 70 years from now, because the technology length of time in 70 years is probably going to be like 1,000 years. I mean, someone once said that all the technological advancements that happened between 1900 and the year 2000 were replicated between 2000 and 2010. And then that same amount of technology was replicated, meaning, you know, the amount of advancement in computing power, in you know, I don't know how they measured it. Maybe it's just strictly the computing power has matched it from 2000. Did I say 2000? I think it was, 2000, 2010. And then 2011 to 2015, we saw that same amount. So we've already seen two centuries go by in the first 15 years. And they're looking at 2.5 years now for the third century equivalency of technology. So you start looking 20 years in the future, you can't imagine what it's going to be like. So I think I can be rest assured that maybe I will have that. If I have an issue, they'll just inject me and I'll be good to go.
Yeah, they may not even have surgery.
Yeah. Do you think they'd still give me the drugs?
Yeah.
Hey, can I have some of that happy stuff where you're getting a booster shot? I don't care.
What I found too with the pain medication,
yeah,
it's strong stuff, but it doesn't make you high.
Oh, really?
It doesn't really do anything. I mean, all it does is dull the pain. Now, I don't know if you didn't have pain if you didn't need it. Not sure that you wouldn't.
I'm sure drug users use it at much, much higher levels too.
Could be.
Because I've read, you know, just being in medicine, I've read some of the levels of people. You know why one of the big reasons they put Tylenol in these drugs is because you can't take too much Tylenol; it'll kill you. So it limits how much of the drug you can take. But they were killing people by doing that. So then they dropped down the dosage of Tylenol in it to try to save some lives because people are just, you know, taking tons of this stuff. It's crazy, yeah, craziness.
Glad they have it.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I hope if there's anyone who's listening who's just about to get heart surgery, their fears are assuaged. Is that the word? Is that the right word?
That's the word.
All right.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Hey, no problem. Listen to this. Oh, wait. No, we already listened to this last song, but we're going to go out with, you know, being the staunch conservative that you are, we will end the show with some Donald Trump.
Love the flow. 69. Now it's time for new,
you know,
believable.
I don't care.
And we must do it.
I don't care what your politics are. This is a catchy tune. I would love to play this loud, like around some rally. A bunch of people are being triggered. Just start dancing to it.
Find common ground to hold the spread of lies. And any